vaccine, make sure you've gotten your COVID-19 booster, especially if you're in an at-risk group. These illnesses can spread quickly in winter, so now is the time to protect yourself. Vaccines boost our immunity and protect us from dangerous viruses. Get boosted. Stay protected. Find out more at careark.org/COVID-19.
KVOE News Time, 8:30 here on this Thursday morning. It is Newsmaker 2 time here today. We're pleased to have with us Team Schnack founder Kent Schnackenberg. Kent, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
So far, so good. We're pleased to have with us from Newman Regional Health, Krista Omi and Sailor Middleton. Krista, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Good. Excited for Thursday.
Outstanding. Sailor, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Well, we're glad to have everybody in. Story started coming out very late last week about Kent's experience at Newman Regional Health. Specifically, really on the health side and the recovery side, because as you know, Kent, you've been really operating Team Schnack. You and Natalie have been the face of Team Schnack now for what, about a decade at this point in time?
10 years.
10 years exactly.
Correct. 2014 was when it started.
Yeah, and being on the bike for as long as you have, it may have surprised a lot of people to realize that you had pretty significant heart issues in your family.
Correct. Correct, and it surprised me too. You know, when it came back to me, I mean, I knew that my father had had some issues in the past, and it was in our family history, and that's what was the moving force to make me want to go get the test.
Gotcha. Before we start talking about your experience last year, when came out that you had atrial fibrillation and then immediate action to get everything corrected, let's back up here a little bit and talk about what got you involved in Team Schnack, kind of set the foundation that way.
Okay. Basically, it was started to help my niece, which we heard she had a disease called diabetes, which at that time we didn't know it was type 1 diabetes. And then my brothers and I started riding bikes and did the Dirty Kansas, which was called back then, 1 year, and did a couple bike rides for an organization called JDRF, which is a Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. And I just kind of fell in love with that and decided to make it my mission at that point in my life to help kids that live with type 1 diabetes and, more importantly, spread awareness about the disease and try to save lives, because I just happened to start hearing about kids that had passed away from being misdiagnosed, and that's where it all started.
What was it about the bikes? Because you could have picked any other way. You could have run. You could have had softball tournaments. You could have just basically said, hey, look, I've got this. I need money. Started, you know, networking that way. What was it about the bikes that really kind of became part and parcel of your mission?
Played softball for a long time. Wasn't that good at it. wasn't that good at a lot of things, but it's not that hard to ride a bike. And I think it just came down to Mark and I would go down to the start line of the Dirty Kansas, and we just thought, why aren't we doing this? And we just gave it a shot. We were getting ready to turn 60, and it was on our bucket list to try the 100, and we did it. And that's what started all the bikes, and it just kind of went from there, and still enjoy riding to this day.
Yeah. Along those lines here, how was your physical health, I guess, before you got started? And at least from what you'd been able to gather, the 10 years leading up to here, was last summer, last fall, how was your physical health?
I think it was okay. I mean, for my age and stuff, you know, I had a yearly physical every year and didn't ever really have anything going on, you know, with that. Had a couple shoulder surgery, which is just wear and tear, which that just comes with the territory of being, you know, in your 60s. But up until this year, I wouldn't say I had any serious physical, excuse me, any serious physical injuries or any bad health that I knew of.
What prompted you to go in and get checked? Was it just kind of the routine, or were there some things that maybe at home or at work that you were kind of feeling that just weren't quite right?
Well, just at work. I go to a lot of customers around Northeast Kansas here in Emporia, and some of them have some pretty severe staircases in them. And just when I get to the top of the stairs, I mean, not only was I a little tired, which is just – that's just common, but I was just having trouble breathing. I'd even have to stand there and kind of catch myself and before I could even go in and talk to him. And I knew something was wrong, and I had continued to do a couple of the bike rides, and I would try to go up a steep hill, and I'd be breathing really, really hard and have to stop and just head back down. So there was signs there, and I kind of put it off a little bit longer than I should have, as far as just 2 to 3 weeks, because I really wanted to go to Wisconsin and do a bike ride. And at that point, nobody would have guessed that I had the blockage I had and stuff. But that's what prompted the stress test. And once I got there that day, that's when everything just started happening.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little about maybe setting up the stress test, and then walk us through the obviously the early part of your visit when everything started coming to light.
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Ryan Lasota is my family doctor now. Had Dr. Barnett for years. He was great. Dr. Ryan's just kind of he could be a cousin to Dr. Barnett. Just he's just the way he is in the office. I mean, he's just so, you know, he's kind, he's quiet, but yet he knows what he's doing. And we just talked about having a stress test this year because I'd had these issues with stairs and stuff, and he said he'd set it up. And, you know, once I had that set and I got back from Wisconsin on a Sunday, and I think it was a Tuesday or Wednesday when I went in for my stress test, and I didn't really expect anything. Natalie had went to Kansas City that morning to babysit, you know, Trent's kids and Trent and Andy's kids, and we just they hooked me up to a machine, and they started looking at a monitor, and they, you know, that one of the gals in there called the other girl over, and I didn't think that was very good at that point. And then they hooked, you know, once I got on the treadmill, I was on there for a few seconds, and they said, just sit down. And they called Dr. Lloyd, and it wasn't that long before he was down there, and they had taken a bunch of pictures, and he looked at them, and right away he started drawing a picture of my heart, and he said, we got issues on the right side of your heart in these three areas, and we need to get you scheduled for surgery. And this was, I think this was probably 11 or 11:30. Time kind of gets away from you. And sure. I think by 2 or 2:30, I was in surgery.
Where were the blockages? Do you remember where they said where they were?
Well, on the right side of my heart.
Right side, okay.
And I believe they were they? Well, I think, and this is just memory, 78, 90, and 98 possibly, which I know that's not good.
No. What was going through your mind when, A, you're getting the word that, hey, you got the blockages, but then they start rolling the percentages at you and saying essentially that flow to and from the heart is almost completely shut down?
I mean, it's scary. It really is. But like I said, I was very comfortable with the people in there. They made me feel comfortable. They were in action. They had constant communication going on with each other. It was, I think, the word that Ashley Walker used, you know, in the interview was, it was very seamless, which I think that's true. For me, it was very seamless, and I was in the right place at the right time with the right care.
Yeah. Krista, that word seamless, I would assume that's what you aim for.
Yes.
Especially in a situation where, you know, you have indications of problems, but then you start seeing the full picture flesh out as rapidly as it did.
Correct, yeah. Our cath lab team is great. They are talk patients through every step of the way, everything that they're doing as far as getting them set up for the procedure. And then, you know, we do a timeout before we start, go over, you know, the patient, make sure we have the right person and any allergies, any concerns, and then get started. We have someone that's at the monitor watching vital signs and heart rhythm the whole time. The nurse is in the room to give medications and pull any extra supplies that Dr. Lloyd and the scrub need to complete the procedure. So they do a great job.
Now, it came out, it was AFib, atrial fibrillation. For folks that don't know what that term means, what exactly does that indicate, and how significant is that?
Atrial fibrillation is an abnormal heart rhythm that's in the top part of the heart. So basically, instead of just your internal pacemaker sending a signal, you have a good contraction of the top part of the heart down to the bottom part. You have a whole bunch of different areas firing all at once. And so since you're not getting a good contraction with each beat, then you're higher risk for stroke because the blood kind of sits there and it can form a clot. So it's pretty common. Everybody has some risk, just normal aging. But there can be other issues. It could be from a valvular issue, from a blockage, from high blood pressure, many different things, or, you know, even it's common after surgery. Some people may have a short episode and then they never have it again. So it's just something we want to be aware of because obviously we want to prevent, you know, stroke from happening. So
yeah, obviously it sounds like it's relatively common, but still really significant.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about the surgery procedures. Because you talked a little bit about the run-up, but talk a little bit, give us some insight about the, you know, kind of the surgery procedures that Kent needed in order to get him back to health.
Yeah. So the cardiac catheterization, or heart cath, we refer to it as. So we give the patient some sedation medicine so they're not fully asleep but comfortable, but we can still talk to them if we need to. And then Dr. Lloyd, they get access either to the artery in the wrist or in the groin and put some long, thin catheters. We kind of call them like a long piece of spaghetti up there to inject some dye so that we can look at the arteries for any blockages. And then they also look at the heart muscle function. And then if there's something that we identify that we can stent or balloon, then he'll do that at the time. If it's something that's more severe where we would need to send the patient for like a bypass surgery, then we would just stop and tell the patient what we found and then refer them on for surgery.
Okay. It seems like not only was the process leading to surgery smooth, but clearly Kent's with us today. He's up and active. How did the surgery procedure go from your guys' perspective?
It went very well. No issues at all. So.
Yeah. And then after that, too, you have the surgery, but then you also have the rehab side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little about the rehab side so that, you know, Kent can get back to his normal schedule and do so as smoothly as possible.
Yeah. Usually we do keep patients overnight, although recently we have started in some cases being able to send people home the same day as an intervention, which is really nice because then people don't have to sit in the hospital overnight and they like to go home. But then they have like a lifting restriction of 10 pounds for about a week. Otherwise, they can basically resume their normal activity. And we also refer them to cardiac rehab. That they go for like 36 sessions and they monitor their heart rhythm, their vitals. They do some activity to just kind of get them back to normal where they're in a safe monitored environment.
Kent, from your perspective, how hard was it just not to kind of go off and do your own thing? when you were done and going through the rehab process that was scripted out for you?
I mean, it wasn't hard for me because I wanted to go.
Yeah.
After the first visit to cardiac rehab, they sit down with you before you start and ask you a series of questions and do some tests and stuff. And I knew right then I really liked the lady I was with. And I went back in for the first session, and all of a sudden I look around and I see people that I know from around town that are in there with me. And everybody's in there for the same reason. They want to get better. They've been through something that they didn't ever expect to go through. And I think people are a little afraid and apprehensive at that point. So I thought I might as well just try to make everybody feel more comfortable and just do what I do best. And that's try to communicate with people and just try to help people. And you become good friends in there. And they have different time slots. And I just picked a time slot that fit my schedule good. And so that sometimes you see different people in there and stuff, but the three girls in there are kind of crazy, but which is good to be in that area because it related good with all the people that were in there rehabbing. But they take it very serious in there. You're wearing a monitor the whole time you're in there, which is good. They have somebody that watches the screen the entire time you're in there. And then they have the other two gals are just helping you, and they're doing specific things. And I really wanted to not have to stop going, but I guess more of it's on me now. But I went up and visited them the other day when one of the girls that I'd been in there with a lady for quite a while was graduating, and it's kind of a cool deal where you sign each other's shirts and stuff. And it was a no question for me. That's where I wanted to be and be a part of it. And I could still do that and still go do my job and still go ride my bike and stuff, but it was great. I have nothing but great things to say about the whole experience.
How important was it for you to have not only the medical staff there helping you, guiding you, cheering you on, but also to have people that you knew that were going through the same thing?
Yeah, I think it was great. And you're just you're helping each other, you're supporting each other. And just the other day, a good friend of mine started cardiac rehab, and I called him on the phone, and we talked a little bit about it and just told him I would never say it's hard, but it's mentally, it's something you need. It's something you need to prove to yourself that, you know, you can sit down on a machine and do it for 30 minutes, and you can do the light weights again and the exercises. And I just think it's very important to work with each other, and just to, like in life, help each other, correct?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Krista, from your perspective, how gratifying is it for you to see, Kent, other patients work their way through the rehab process and come back and they're able to say, hey, look, I'm in great shape. I can demonstrate I'm in good shape and get back to life the way they had it before.
Yeah, it's great. That's kind of our goal with every patient that we have. And sometimes symptoms are, you know, they're very subtle. People don't really know how bad they truly feel until something happens and, you know, we're able to fix the blockage. And then they're like, oh my gosh, I feel so good. Like I just thought I was getting older, but there really was something wrong. So it's great.
Speaking of that, what should people look for when it comes to AFib's symptoms? Are there specific telltale symptoms here of AFib that we need to be looking for, regardless of how subtle they may be?
Sure. Many people, they might feel their heart beating hard or kind of a fluttering feeling. Some people have shortness of breath. They might feel tired, some lightheadedness, that kind of thing. Other people never have any symptoms, so in those it's a little bit harder to catch. But, yeah, there's definitely signs to look for.
Outstanding. Well, really, A, appreciate you guys being with us here today, and B, glad that we're able to, report, Kent, that, after pretty scary thing, you're in great shape and back at it here with Team Schneck.
Well, I would never use the word great shape, but I'm happy to be here and continue what we're doing with Team Schneck, obviously, and the kids. But it's just I told the girls earlier that, that night you're laying in the hospital and you realize what, you could have lost and what you have to live for, like my family, obviously, number one, and the kids I try to help, and just being a good person and trying to help people in other ways. It's gratifying to know that we have that ability here in Emporia, Kansas. And I didn't really know much about that before this happened, and I was just in the right place at the right time. But the hospital is a really essential part of this community, and we want to do everything we can to keep it strong and keep it going. And if I can help in any way, I'll be here to help them.
Yeah, and Sailor, from your perspective, you've been in here several times over the last few weeks talking about some of the awards and the successes, but this really points out the individual care that you get at the hospital.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Chuck. And I think also it kind of touches on a more emotional aspect as well. We really as a hospital want to practice, what we preach, and we really want to show that and to showcase, the patient stories is very important. We could have brought in the cardiology team. We could have brought in the rehab team and spoke on behalf of anonymous patient and told somewhat of the story. But to hear the story live and to hear it in a raw form, it's a very vulnerable state. And, we appreciate Kent wanting to share his story and go alongside us to, bring awareness to the community, to bring opportunity for people to speak up if they like, and to just have a safe space to, relate to one another or learn from one another. And I think that's just something we really want to strive for.
Outstanding. Well, Sailor, Krista, Kent, thanks for joining us here this morning.
Thank you.
And thanks for filling us in here on the work of the cardiac rehab and cardiology department. Thanks for going in.
Yeah. Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you.
Sailor Middleton, Krista Omi, Kent Schnackenberg joining us here for the Newsmaker 2 segment. Don't forget, we got a Newsmaker 3 shortly with Friendship Center administrators as our morning show continues.
And our Newsmaker 2 brought to you this morning by CareArc, healthcare without the headache, formerly Flint Hills Community Health Center. That's CareArc. Good morning. It's 8:47.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Former President Donald Trump has arrived at a New York courtroom for a hearing that could decide whether the former president's first criminal trial involving hush money paid to adult film star Stormy Daniels will begin in a little over.